All right, well, happy feast day.
Happy feast day.
All right. This is awesome. This is our patronal feast. It's great to see so many people here. You'll notice, too, that there's a lot of things different. So you get a break from Lent right now. And I never take breaks from Lent. Not Sundays, not feast days, nothing except for today. Right? Because it's the patronal feast of our own parish. You're going to notice there's different things. The consecration candles are lit around the church. The only times you can do that are on the patronal feast, the day of the consecration of the church, and the Easter Vigil. Also, you see the altar cloth has changed. Just little subtle things sometimes. It's a lot more ornate than our Lenten one, which is really simple. We have this massive table full of immense goodies. By the way, if you haven't seen it yet, after Mass, check out the tabernacle. It's supposed to be a replica. It is a replica of our tabernacle. Inside's full of cake. I can't wait to smash it. I say it's just like a normal tabernacle, right? It's beautiful on the outside, but the good stuff's on the inside, right? So that, we have the organ back, which is nice. I'm sure some of you have felt that. Just no organ, just chant, no music. We have the Gloria. We have all these beautiful things that happen today. All for the feast of this one saint, Saint Joseph. And it is interesting to think about the fact. The fact that the greatest male saint in the church is not an evangelist, not a pope, not a priest, not a deacon, not a religious, a nun or a monk or a brother. It's a blue-collar stepfather. That's unbelievable. A married man. So if I hear one more time some roughneck, beer-drinking, truck-driving, blue-collar worker tell me Christianity just isn't for me, I'm going to punch him because... Look, this man, like, he's the man. There's this great hymn in the Office of Readings, and the first line of it every year I love reading, it says, Joseph, you are the man. You're the man. He was the man, the greatest male saint. And the reason for this, I think, is Christianity is for everyone. It's for everyone. You know, we just caught the end of that genealogy this morning. Thank goodness, because it's really long and boring. But in that genealogy, there are some messed up people. Why? Well, I mean, Jesus, God the Father, they want to show us that the church is for everyone. The swindlers, the cheats, the prostitutes, step-parents, murderers, gamblers, all of them, all are welcome. Even though that's a famous church hymn, modern church hymn, all are welcome in this place. I hate that song. And the reason I hate that song is because it just doesn't grasp what the true meaning is. Yes, all are welcome. All are welcome. But you gotta change. When you get here, you change. They say often the church fathers return to the church as a hospital. You don't go to a hospital just to stay sick. You go to a hospital to get healed, to convert, to live the life of faith. And so yes, everyone's welcome, but we're called to change. And this is what I think makes St. Joseph the archetype saint. You know, in spite of knowing nothing about the man, he and his wife are the models of Christian holiness. So when you marry people and you're like, oh, you know, that's for priests and popes. No, it's not. The two greatest saints in the church, they were a married couple. It's for you. It's for everyone. You know, as I said, we don't know anything about Joseph. He never speaks. Did you know that? There's not a single recorded word of Joseph in the scripture. And I think that's why many women say he's the model husband, right? He doesn't need to speak because he listens. We speak too much. Often we don't listen. And when he listens, he hears. And then he does it. He does what God is asking for him. And that is the heart of holiness, to hear God's word and to act. You know, a buddy of mine, I was thinking about what to preach on. And I was like, every year I preach on St. Joseph, and you kind of run out of things to say. So a buddy of mine was talking to me, and he said, you know, every parish's patron saint dictates the charism of the parish. And I was like, well, what do you mean by that? And he said, well, whoever your saint is, whatever they were known for, they usually, through their intercession, bestow that upon the parish. And I was like, huh. Well, I wonder what that looks like for us. And as I prayed a long time about this, I came up with a couple things. Maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong. You can judge. First, Joseph was a righteous man. Now, when we say righteous, we think in the modern day and age, because we're not nearly as devoted to God as the ancient people were. We should be, but we're not. A righteous man does not mean he was a good guy. He was a nice guy. It means that no matter what God asked of him, he did it. That's what righteousness meant. It meant responding to God's call immediately, no matter what the sacrifice, no matter what the cost. Which means that Joseph then again becomes our this beautiful example for us. You know, and as I got thinking about it, because to be a righteous person, it costs you. To be a righteous parish, it costs you. And it has cost us. It's cost us financially for sure, but it's cost us parishioners to do what we believe God has asked us to do. And many have left. And it breaks my heart. It hurts. And I'm sure it broke Joseph's heart when he had to make hard decisions. Some have left over the liturgy. Some have left over that we celebrate Mass Ad Orientem. Some have left because the choir moved up to the choir loft. Some have left because the servers are all boys. Some have left because of the school. And it hurts. It hurts. It's cost us. But we believe that it's what God is asking of us. And so we, like Joseph, following his example, obediently surrender to his will. If there's anybody that knows the pain of following God's will, it's him. But second, Joseph was a dreamer. He had dreams. You know, a couple nights ago, I had this dream. Mine aren't nearly as holy as Joseph's. I was stuck in a gas station and I couldn't get out. And I paid like four times for gas and no pumps would work. So then I wanted to leave and go to another gas station and I couldn't get out because everybody was boxing me in and nobody would move. So I just, in anger, this is how my dreams go. I just drove over the curb and all of my tires exploded. And I woke up. You've ever woken up from a dream and you're like, no! You're like, yes! It wasn't true because dreams, man, can dreams feel real. And for Joseph, you know, dreams open up a new world, a new reality. And in dreams, the impossible becomes possible. And so Joseph was a dreamer. Would that we would all become dreamers. And every dream he has. You know, I said this last year. I think Joseph must have been afraid to go to sleep. Because every time he goes to sleep, you know, it's just restful sleep. And all of a sudden God's like, Joseph, what? No. But he's a righteous man. And so these difficult, impossible situations, he knows with God all things are possible and he does it. And I got to thinking about our school, you know. Our school has followed Joseph to the T. If you just think about this, it was 5 years ago that we made the change. And you know, we went down, there was an arduous change, it was tough, it was like crossing the desert on foot. And I was saying things got, you know, okay. And now we're on year five, and there's struggles again, and there's difficulties, and there's turnover at faculty and administration. Just as Joseph was in Egypt, he was there, everything was good, and 5 years later, God says, get over, do it again. And we follow. We keep dreaming of what could be and what Jesus wants through this whole mission. Joseph must have felt like he was barely surviving in God's plan. But in the end, it all worked out. And this is what is so amazing to me. Our patron, St. Joseph, he kills himself for the Holy Family. He strives and works so hard. And he never gets to see the fulfillment of the plan. We have a depiction right behind us of the death of St. Joseph. Jesus and Mary on his side. But he never saw Jesus' public ministry. He never saw the miracles. He never saw the crucifixion resurrection. And yet he killed himself in protection of that family. That is holiness. Third, Joseph is the protector of the Holy Family. This involved a lot. He was put in impossible situation after impossible situation. And this got me thinking about the new school we started, the high school and junior high. What did we name it? School of the Holy Family. That was either the, you know, the smartest thing we've ever done or the craziest thing we've ever done. To put it under the patronage of the Holy Family, means there's going to be struggle, but there will be victory. Joseph felt this intensely. I cannot tell you how many times since that school opened that sometimes I feel like everything's great. Other times I think, like, what is going on? But God keeps providing and keeps guiding us, just as he did the Holy Family. The final characteristic, and what I think we symbolize the most as a parish, is that St. Joseph had a reverence for the holy, for the things of God. You know, for years, I have gotten this wrong, and I think you've probably gotten this wrong too. We've gotten a couple things wrong about Joseph. The first thing we got wrong about Joseph, many people think that he was an old man. You know why in our tradition, some part of the church says he's an old man? Well, because he was married to the Blessed Virgin Mary. And for an old man, the struggle for sexuality stuff isn't that difficult. That's why they make him an old man. But let me ask you this. You know, old men, no offense here, okay? But for all of you that are old men here, if you were an old man and you had a young woman that had a baby, an infant child, would you make a 42-day trek across a desert with that infant child and a mother of a newborn? And then when you got there, would you start a new business? Would you old men do that, or do you enjoy retirement a little bit more? And then after 5 years, you would pick everything up, leave your business, take another 42-day journey across a desert that is wilderness and barren with your wife and 5-year-old child. And then when you got back to your hometown, start a business again. Old men don't do that. Young, strong men do that. And that's how we know Joseph was young and strong. But here's the other thing we get wrong about him. What I think we get wrong, and I think we get it wrong because we don't think big enough. We don't think big enough. We don't think holy enough. And what I'm talking about is that we think Joseph wanted to quietly divorce Mary. Why? Why do you think he wanted to quietly divorce Mary? Can anybody answer that question? Scandal. Good. That is what everybody in this church is thinking, and I think it's completely wrong. Good answer, though. Thanks for answering. And the reason I think it's wrong is this. In the ancient world, the ancient Jewish context, there were two parts of marriage. We heard about it in the gospel. It says when Joseph was betrothed to Mary, and yet they were not living together. Those are the two parts of the Jewish context of marriage. Betrothal and what they called the nuptials, or when they came to live together in the same house. The first part of that, the betrothal, is called the kedushin in Hebrew. In the kedushin, you had three things. You were bound by three things. You were bound to be married by dowry from the mother or the woman's parents. You were bound by legal contract. And third and final, you ready for this? You were bound by marital intimacy. That is in the Jewish Talmud, the law, the explanation of the law. So that means that during the betrothal process, you're married. You have all the perks of marriage, if you know what I'm talking about, just for the kids. And so Mary getting pregnant during this time would not be scandalous. It wouldn't be scandalous at all. And then you had the second part. It was about a 3-month to a year period before you moved in together. Why? Well, because they didn't have Bianco Realty in ancient Jerusalem. You couldn't just go out on a home parade. You had to build a home. And that took time. Or you had to buy one. You had to have enough money to buy it. And so when they come together to live together, that's what they call the consummation of the marriage. Now, when we think consummation, we think something much differently in the modern day and age. But for them, consummation meant we were finally living together under one roof as married people. But Mary and Joseph were married. So then here comes a question. In Luke 1:34, when the angel comes to Mary and says, you're going to be pregnant. And she says, how? I've never known a man. What? They're in the betrothal process. They're married. They should be intimate. Why hasn't Mary known Joseph yet? The only answer to that is that Mary took a promise to God that she would remain a virgin for life in honor and love of him. And this is not unheard of. In the Dead Sea Scrolls from the Qumran community, it's written about both men and women made this perpetual promise, a higher calling to live a life on earth in service to God through virginity and chastity. So then you sit back and you're like, okay, that makes sense. Now the real question comes, why is Joseph in this? He's got to know. If marital intimacy is already part of their marriage, Mary obviously has told him, I'm a virgin for life. And probably told him before, and he still said yes. So why is Joseph in it? Because he's a righteous man. He's not a good guy. He's not a nice guy. He wants to do God's will no matter what it costs him. And he believes that God sent Mary to him to protect and to watch over and to serve. And that's why when the angel appears to Joseph in the dream, he says to him, Joseph, don't be afraid. Afraid? If my wife cheated on me, I wouldn't be afraid. I would be furious. It should say, Joseph, don't be angry. But it says, Joseph, don't be afraid. What is Joseph afraid of? Joseph, as any good righteous Jew, would have known the Old Testament, and he would have known Isaiah chapter 7, in which it says, the virgin will conceive and bear a son, and you will name him Emmanuel. God is with us. The reason Joseph's afraid, the reason he wants to do this quietly and get out, is because he doesn't feel worthy to be the father of the guardian of the Redeemer of mankind. Like Peter in the boat, remember? They catch that huge thing of fish, and Peter's like, Jesus, depart from me. I'm a sinful man. And Jesus says, no, you're going to be a fisher of men. You follow me. Peter's saying, you got the wrong guy. And what Joseph is saying today is, God, you got the wrong guy. I want to do this, but I didn't realize what this was. This is so much. And I don't feel worthy of it. Joseph had this deep, deep reverence for the holy. He's not afraid of Mary being pregnant outside of marriage by some scandal. He's not even afraid of her cheating on him. He knows her holiness, her perpetual virginity, her promise to God. What he's afraid of is that Isaiah 7 is true. And he's the man. And yet when he has that dream, and in all of his dreams, he does what's asked of him, no matter how difficult. And I think that's the charism that he has bestowed on this parish more than anything else, to do what is right, no matter what it costs us. Because we believe it's God's plan. We as a parish, we strive to do God's will, whatever he asks of us, no matter what it costs us. We dream big, and we trust that God will provide. And we protect what God has entrusted to us with reverence and humility and faith. And in doing this, we're following in the steps of our patron. And we trust that he will intercede for us and give us the encouragement we need as we walk that crazy journey that he walked 2,000 years ago. The journey we call holiness. St. Joseph, guardian of the Redeemer, spouse of the Blessed Virgin Mary, pray for us.